The last cases on our calendar, 96-1894, 1895, 1897, State of Ohio, ex-rel Anthony Pisa versus Mary Rizcala. You'll notice that Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case, and we're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Donald Ford, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 11th District. Welcome, Judge Ford.
Chief.
Mr. Pugandia.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Burke Pugandia. I represent the Appellant State of Ohio in this case. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
Okay, watch your time on the clock there.
Thank you. Your Honor, the issue presented in these three cases involves a conflict between two interests. On the one hand, we have the interest of landowners in not having sanctions imposed upon them due only to the actions of the tenants of the properties. And on the other hand, we have the interest of the state in protecting the health, safety and welfare of the public. And the problem that's addressed in these cases is the crack cocaine epidemic. I can tell you that in my hometown, Toledo, Ohio, crack cocaine and the other problems that go along with it, gang violence, prostitution, is ravaged entire sections of my hometown, and I would venture to say that it's probably affected sections of your hometown in a similar way.
So the ends justify the means. Because we have that problem, we should eliminate the Fourth Amendment. We should eliminate the right to trial by jury, probably.
Well, no, Your Honor. In fact, the rule established by the court below does not strike a fair balance between the two interests that I identified, whereas by contrast, the rule that the state advocates does strike a fair balance between those interests. Under the rule of the appellate court, in a case in which an absentee landowner is named as a defendant, the plaintiff or the state cannot obtain injunctive relief unless they prove the elements of knowledge and acquiescence or participation on the part of the absentee owner.
Why is that such an outrageous burden, if it is, in fact, the proper burden?
Yes. Well, the problem is that it grossly impairs the ability of the state or the plaintiff to utilize Chapter 3767 to obtain injunctive relief, because if an absentee landowner is named as a defendant in a case and the elements cannot be proved against him, then no injunction will issue and the nuisance will continue unabated.
But in this case, you had the people that were occupants were all pretty much arrested at the end. One lady began eviction proceedings. So the problem with, as to that immediate property owner, if they were taking actions or actions were taken before them by the police to clear the property, why would they then have to suffer the penalty? Why can't they go out and, you know, try to be more careful and rent in the next tenant and bring somebody in there that's decent? I don't see if you get rid of the people that are in the property, the need for an injunction or the need to padlock it, what is the public policy there?
Well, in the Rescalon case and the Morton case, the record demonstrates that the landowners in both those cases rarely, if ever, visit the premises. And so the value of getting an injunction on the premises is to encourage them to more aggressively monitor the properties.
What would the nature of that injunction be?
The injunction prohibits any further activities, any further crack sales in the premises. And one of the remedies that issues under Section 04C and 06A is that a closure order issues from the court. And under the rule that we propose, a property owner, even though the elements have not been proved as to the property owner, after the injunction issues and after the closure order issues, the property owner can come in and post the property as bond, and after closing, can get back the property and reuse it.
Now, what is the reality of that? I'm told by the president of the National Surety association of Ohio is viable with surety bonds. Have you gone out to try to buy one in the marketplace today?
Well, there's two ways they can do the bond. They can do it by way of the cash value, or they can put the property itself up. And in past cases, typically it's done by putting the property up itself.
I don't think there's an appropriate burden then cast in that direction if they are able. Let's say the thing is mortgaged or quite heavily leaned in some manner. Do we go by the net value, the equitable value, or the tax value, or the market value, and we've got a mortgage on it for purposes of a bond?
I believe the statute says the market value of the property.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I believe the statute says the market value of the property. But once the injunction issues, and the issuance of the injunction gives the landowner the incentive to monitor the property, and in connection with your question, and these landowners monitored the properties from the beginning, initially, they probably would have been able to prevent, we probably would have never had to bring the nuisance action. They probably would have been able to evict these people on their own, pursuant to 3767.10. And so, really, they caused the problems themselves by not monitoring the property.
But under the way your rule is proposed, you could have some crack tenants in there for just 1 month. You guys start doing some buys, you close the place down, and based on even that 1 month, you could go get a closing order, could you not?
That's correct.
And so now you've got, how is a landlord, how are you going to become aware of anything going on in that short period of time? Because that rule can have very inequitable applications.
Well, typically, credit cards investigations, at least as they're done in my office, last 3 months or more. So, at least, theoretically, your hypothetical could happen. But I think if the landowner were to come in and say, hey, look, I go by the place once a week, once every 2 weeks, we would take that into consideration.
This one said that in September it came to your knowledge. September 26th, you made your first purchase. Your first search warrant was October 2nd. By October 9th, you would have been by 10th. By the middle of October, you guys had raided the place. She filed her first motion for the claim for eviction October 26th. So, and that's not even 2 full months from when you guys first became aware of it, that the tenant is, or the landlord is taking some action.
Yeah, are you referring to the arrest application?
Yes, I think I am.
Actually, yeah, that case.
So you've only got a two-month period in which you immediately took some action and did something, and yet you still went ahead and sought a closure order, even though she filed for eviction of those people that just gave her attention because you notified her.
That's true, but in that case, she lived right around the corner from the house. And
she's a little old lady. I mean, is she going to go down and visit them every day? Is that realistic to expect?
No, but she said that she very rarely visited the premises. I mean, we have to expect more from landowners than just collecting their rent checks once a month, especially given the nature of the problem and severity.
Well, Counselor, what? Say you own a rent, and the tenant has, now I'm here, and then you begin to notice other people with long hair or play loud music and come and go. Are you supposed to know at that point that you've got a problem?
No, but typically these grant houses, as you can tell, people come to the house, they'll stay for just a couple minutes, they'll leave, and there's a lot of traffic at the house. And I think that would be pretty clear to anyone.
Maybe they're selling Shackley.
Well, what do you do once you determine it's a crack house with respect to the owner? What opportunities do you give them to do something?
Well, if they...
And what support do you give them if they might reasonably be a little intimidated by their tenants?
Well, if they can come to us and they say that they actively monitor the property...
No, wait a minute. What do you do? You make a determination that this is a crack house. Do you then notify the landowner and say, here's what's going to happen next unless you get these people out of there?
Yes, we do. After every, particularly if here's how the investigation goes in a given house, we do a couple undercover buys or confidential informant buys, usually anywhere from 2 to 3, 2 to 4. Then we'll do a search warrant based upon that. Then we'll send a letter out to the landlord after search warrant. And usually each case is comprised of several buys and 2 search warrants. So typically in each case, 2 letters are sent to the landlord saying that we have had to execute a search warrant on the premises. We have to do this again. We're going to consider bringing a padlock in. So notice has been given out. Recently we've changed the practice. Before they weren't sending them out by certified mailing. They were sending out a regular mail based upon the information that we get from the auditor's office system as to the property owner's identity. Now we've changed that and we're sending out by certified mail. But yes, we do give notice to the landowner and we do give them time to evict the tenants and try to do something about it themselves before we file the action. But once we file the action, the only remedy that the landowner has would be to find out the property under our rule.
Is the next step after you get this that they don't have to, you don't have to show knowledge of the landowner? You can padlock it, and then of course, because there was a drug activity, you can forfeit the property. Is that the next step? Forfeit the property without knowledge? Without you showing knowledge?
Yeah, after the issuance of the drugs, yeah, let's say it's under bond and sales happen. Contempt would certainly be a possibility, and forfeiture would be an option as well.
So you could end up with a decision here reversing and adopting your proposition of law that a person's property could be forfeited without their knowledge of the illegal activity going on.
Well, if they should, if they came in and said, look, during the bonding period, I made efforts to monitor the property, we would certainly consider that.
Well, that would be nice that you'd consider it, but the fact is you could still bring the forfeiture action if we said knowledge was not a component.
That's correct. Application took up an injunction, yes. And we admit, Your Honor, the remedy that our rule admittedly is harsh, but at least it allows the property owner to bind up the property and get it back. And in light of the nature of the problem, crack cocaine epidemic, I think, and our position is that a harsh rule is justified.
The ends justify the means.
But isn't the rule harsh against the wrong people?
Yes, it is. Sure, we would like to have the... it's just not possible to work it out if you could have the...
The dealer doesn't have anything to get a hold of, so you get a hold of somebody who doesn't have anything to do with the drug deal.
That's right. They are a property owner, and they do owe responsibility to the neighborhood where they own the property to be more involved in just collecting the rent checks, to go there periodically and observe what's going on.
What is your best statutory argument, the language of the statute specifically, that you need to rely on that says you don't have to prove knowledge or culpability, and what is your best case authority for that?
Sure. Well, under the decision of the appellate court, two standards are created, a varying standard is created. In a case, if you do not name the landowner, you can get the very same remedies by proving the elements as to an occupant. On the other hand, in a case where you just name the defendant as the owner as a defendant, you cannot get the very same remedies. And the statute, nowhere in the statute is the distinction between the two cases mentioned at all. Because the remedies, like I said, the issue are the same.
What language do you rely on the statute that says that your proposition of law, which asks us to show that there need not be culpability, you need not show participation therein on the part of the occupant or the owner. or acquiescence or knowledge. You must not prove, you don't need to prove any of that. What in the statute in 37 and 67 says that?
The only thing that addresses that and not directly is section 02 that states that any person who uses, occupies, establishes, or conducts a nuisance or aids or abets it, and the owner thereof, that's the section that will provide our and further the bonding provisions and the sanctions that issue under section 04C, they make nothing of the statute makes a between cases in which the owner is independent, which they're not, because the same remedies issue in either case.
And do you have a case authority that specifically holds what you want us to rule in Proposition Law 1?
No, we do not. But the Ewing case, which I cite at page 20 of my brief, in paragraph 5 of the syllabus, the court held that a defendant property, upon meeting the conditions set forth in section 04C and 06A, 06A makes reference to 04C, has to be allowed to bond that property. And under the rule of the court below, a scenario in which a defendant has to buy out the property cannot occur because either the injunction will not issue due to the failure of proof, or under the appellate court construction of the statute, an owner as whom knowledge has been shown is not allowed to buy out the property.
Would it be fair to say that that's a 1974 case, that the crack cocaine problem that you're trying to solve now was not what it was, not what it was in 1974, it wasn't what it is now?
Oh, sure, sir.
So maybe that case dealt with a different thought about a nuisance.
That's true, but at the same time, this is, of course, interpretation of the bonding
provision. Mm-hmm. You've used your time, Mr. Villagrande. Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Culpability was inferred because of the evidence, whether it be factual evidence or circumstantial evidence that was presented to the court. The issue here is, in these particular cases, culpability of the home. The sentence of the problem, the home.
When you use the word culpability, how do you mean that? Is scienter necessarily culpability?
Knowledge, participation, acquiescence.
I understand participation. When you use again the word culpability, what specific meaning do you give it in this context?
In culpability, some factor of knowledge, participation, acquiescence on the part of
any one of those elements.
Although the statute seems to include all of them, knowledge and participation. But we must look at, does the statute provide appropriate relief in situations where there is a nuisance? And it does. It provides an injunction against that person who's selling drugs. And that's where the injunction should be placed. Not on the innocent homeowner, the homeowner who is merely leasing his property and has no knowledge of what's being done with it. One drug buy or two drug buys are being done with over a period of 6 days or 6 months. The home is merely a place that it happened. It could have happened on a street corner. It could have happened in a car. It could have happened in the restroom of this building. Drug sales could be occurring. So it is ludicrous to assume that the injunction is against the building because it is the nuisance. And that is not, in my opinion, what is the nuisance. It is the drug dealer himself dealing with drugs. Which he has not brought forward is brief, but he did submit the authority prior to the oral arguments. He did not cite, but I wish to address that as a U.S. Supreme Court case, Venice v. Michigan.
The Venice case?
The Venice case.
Yeah. What does that say?
To me, that case strongly supports my position. It supports my position because the legislature of Michigan specifically gave their intent in a statute. And that statute said, which Ohio statute does not say, that the innocent owner, it makes no difference, you do not have to prove knowledge on the owner's part.
That's what Venice holds.
There's a statute.
Right, I understand. It's a Michigan statute, and they just held that in the last term, 1996 term. And don't they specifically say in that case that they rely on the Michigan statute that says that knowledge is not necessary, the prosecution doesn't have to show knowledge, and that that statute is a constitutional statute?
In my interpretation of that case, in terms of not dealing with the statute, it dealt more with the forfeiture itself.
Yes, that was the next step. Go ahead.
My position is that Ohio law does not specifically state that we need not prove knowledge. It's just the opposite. And had our legislature intended that, they would have said so. There would have been a statute just like we should.
Well, but your position, mainly in your argument to us, has been one of public policy. We cannot subject landholders to this. We cannot subject homeowners to this. We cannot subject this building to it because it's going on in one of the restrooms. So it's really been a public policy argument from your standpoint, I think, at least that's the way I've read it, that this would be bad public policy to subject homeowners to that. You agree that Michigan has done that? And you agree that, do you agree Ohio can do it too?
Certainly the courts can.
Not the courts, the General Assembly. That's a statute in Michigan.
Certainly the General Assembly can. can pass the law.
So if they pass that law, and that is the public policy, then it's not really a good reason not to, to enforce 37, Chapter 37.
I don't necessarily agree that the Supreme Court, in its ruling on Venice, I'm just citing the basis in which I believe it supports my case.
Yes.
Well,
I understand that.
The dissent in Venice is quite fervent in that regard as well. I have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Fuganda, you've saved your, or you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. Your Honor, with regard to the Venice case, the reason I cited that is the Venice case held that the forfeiture, that the property owner can have their property forfeited without their knowledge being shown. And in that case, the property owner, basically the issue was whether there was a due process problem with the fact that the statute did not have the innocent owner defense. And I would just say that with regard to the closure order and the owner's having to either choose between bonding on the property or temporarily losing its use for a period of 1 year, if there's no problem with an owner's losing the property without their knowledge being shown, I don't think there's any problem with an owner's having to choose between losing the use of property for 1 year or having to bond it out. And in some of these cases, give the court an opportunity to preserve by felony effectiveness of Chapter 3767, to evade felony drug nuisances, to protect and strike a fair balance between the two interests that are at issue in this case. So I would ask the court to reverse the appellate court and demand.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal will please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. Close session. Long Supreme Court of Ohio. Now stands adjourned.
Thank you.